listening to Wine on the Vine with Lisa Mayaka, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I just got this like little buzz on my watch that LA Talk Radio is live right now, and it's live with this show. I am Lisa Mayaka, your host. This is Wine on the Vine, a brand new show to LA Talk Radio. And I can't be more excited. Welcome. You are welcome. This is a shameless storytelling show. So, okay, Lisa, what does that even mean? So this show is about telling our stories one to the other. And you won't know the names. I'm going to have a guest every week. They won't be celebrity. They won't be renowned, but you ought to know them, right? And my hope is that you find yourself somewhere in one of the stories that we offer to you week after week. And why is that? Because in order to be, right, we're human beings, not human doings. We're human beings. And in order to be, we need to just be one with the other. And so this show is to do exactly that. It's for the purpose of telling a story. You know, storytelling has been around since the beginning of time, I am certain. I mean, long before there was a printing press or the God-written Ten Commandments were handed down to Moses on that hill or hieroglyphics in the cave, there was only our mouths to pass on oral tradition from one generation to the next. And this, in fact, is how legacies and lessons and law were communicated. And over the course of time, I think we've lost a little bit of that. But thank goodness, in the last decade, we have seen we've seen this storytelling piece come back across many venues and formats. I myself have taken the stage in several cities across the United States and given a 9 or 10 minute snippet of a story. There is the Moth podcast, which I subscribe to regularly, that, you know, people have to spend the night in the car to maybe get on the stage, to maybe tell their story, to maybe get on the air. But these are just glorious glimpses into the regular affairs of ordinary human beings that do extraordinary things all the time. And so I'm so grateful for LA Talk Radio giving me the opportunity to bring shameless storytelling to the masses through online format. I love that we can gather here on a weekly basis and be free in what we say and how we say it and what we talk about. And so my aim is to bring you beautiful people who have lived and who are here to share their stories with you. You know, Maya Angelou, one of my favorite poets of all time, says this. She says, there's no greater agony than bearing an untold story within you. So what this show is offering is an opportunity to release that angst. And I believe that this space that we will share, whether it be in person in my little home studio, thank you, COVID, or if we're back in the studios, will be sacred space, right? Wine on the Vine is not a gossip column. We are not we're not here for therapy. We are not here as a how-to show. I don't want to tell you how to be. You know how to be. I'm here to elicit the stories and to hear so we can understand and meet one another where they are. Wine is W-H-I-N-E. There might be W-I-N-E involved along the way, but you know, that angst that we bear within us often comes out in many, many ways. And until we have been given permission to tell our stories, until somebody sits with us while we tell our stories, till somebody accepts our stories for what they are, I'm not sure that any of us can really heal, be, and understand. So that's why we're here. So welcome. I am tickled that you have joined me today, whether it be online or you'll be on my podcast later, or you're live with me on Facebook right now, which is why I got all kind of done up. But don't read too much into that. What I want you to know is that you are welcome. You are welcome to listen. You are welcome to converse. You are welcome to respond. You are welcome to join me. We will definitely be inviting guests of all kinds in the next year and two as we go forward. But today, I am beside myself excited, not only to launch my show, but to invite to join me my very first guest, who happens to be a dear friend, a former colleague, and we have called ourselves sisters from another mister. So I have this beautiful, beautiful woman here with me today, and I have themed this show, and I think I'm going to theme our shows hitherto, henceforth, forevermore around a topic, because otherwise we just sit and talk for hours on end, and Sam won't allow it. You don't have time. You'll get bored. But for the 50 minutes that we have together, I want a theme, right? And so today's theme is very close to my experience of the last year. I mean, who the hell hasn't had a really hard year between pandemic and whatever else unfolded because of said pandemic, political polarization, wearing pajamas to work every day. I mean, you name it. There have been so many reasons for us to lose our minds, lose our shit, lose our jobs, lose our everything. And so today's topic is angry at God. And whoever God is to you, universe, higher power, whatever. I have spent a big part of the last year really angry, trying to like wrangle myself out of who I am to who I have to be in the moment because of everything else that presents. And today's guest has a very unique take on anger at God. And I am just so excited to welcome Cece. So come on in. So we're both COVID tested negative. One of us is vaccinated. And so, so we're here in person. We're not even 6 feet apart. But we're safe. So I want you, of course, to understand that those are the circumstances. And LA Talk Radio has made it possible for us to do this. So yay!
Hey, it's exciting to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Like, I wouldn't want anybody else on my show, my first kind of foray into this public arena, that wasn't also a kind of trusted compadre. So I that's so important, right? So when we share stories, whether you do that with a therapist or a family member or a friend or the universe, like we're doing today, I want that to be a safe experience for you. So Christy and I have had so many conversations over the course of our relationship, and we share a lot of similar stories, not the same. Similar. We're similar in age.
Right.
We're similar in professional experience.
Right.
We're similar in some of life's experiences.
Our backgrounds with religion. And
so, and we're going to go here. This is a big piece, actually. We were raised very, very religious in a Protestant format. And so that's going to play into her conversation with us, her story. We've also educated ourselves,
yes,
on the other end of those religious experiences in social work and in life, right. Post-divorce life.
Right.
So there's so many stories that we thought about telling today, and some of them we're not quite ready to tell.
No, some of them we might never tell.
So, you know, you write us a letter, like maybe you want to hear more. But you have a story you want to tell today.
Yes. So you had mentioned about the year being so difficult. And it's been difficult for a lot of people. And I don't want to downplay that COVID-19 has impacted us. It's impacted the way I work. It's impacted the way I live. It's impacted me, my health, not because I've had it, but just how I have to and be more mindful of every, I've never seen anything in my 49 and a half years of experience that just seemed to take over so much.
So I'm going to stop her here without revealing too much. Cece is a first responder of sorts. So y'all can send her prayers and kudos and energy and all of that. But when she talks about this year, she talks about it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And she's not just a first responder. She is a mother.
Mm-hmm. Two children.
Okay.
A boy and a girl. They're adults now.
Okay.
Like 25 and 23 at the end of the month.
So. Okay.
So I guess I'll go back to when the first time I really realized I was angry.
With God. So who's God to you?
So God is the God of the Bible.
Right? Okay. So God, raised with the Bible.
Okay. Traditional values, Judeo-Christian values, definitely. I grew up in Protestant evangelical church, wasn't allowed to go to dances, couldn't listen to secular music. When I was finally allowed to date at the age of 16, the guy had to call my dad and ask permission just to be on a date, which means I didn't date.
And I feel like your experience might have been Judeo-Christian, but I feel like that was maybe a generational piece as well. Of your generation having a completely other experience?
So my friends we all had the similar rules, but I was the oldest of the group. And so maybe I was the only one expected to follow the rules, because behind me, others did go to the homecoming and did go to the prom and there were birthday parties of my friends in church I wasn't allowed to go to because there was going to be dancing. There's conversations I've now had as an adult with some of these people where we're like, what? Like, we were just kids. We just wanted to have a good time.
Yeah.
And there was no drinking, no drugs, no. So what was so wrong with all that? What were all these rules?
You shook a leg.
And I didn't even dance very well. But here's the thing. That was what my parents knew. And they didn't know any differently. And so that's what they
were teaching me. So mom and dad were your biggest influencers. Mm-hmm. And you're the oldest?
I'm the oldest.
Of two
initially, and then we had an adopted sister.
Okay. All right. So that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you were kind of, you were raised with a framework that made God or whoever this higher power is out to be something that disallowed certain behaviors and blah, blah, blah.
Yes. And if you did the good behaviors that you were supposed to, then he rewarded you.
Oh, right? In what way did he reward you?
Well, then you were blessed.
How so?
So you would have prosperity. You would have good health. Bad things weren't supposed to happen if you were doing what you were supposed to do.
Oh, my. Okay.
Which is so, if anybody who's read any Bible story will know that they were all humans.
Well,
all those stories.
Let's not even go to the Bible right now.
But it's just, like, it's kind of broken the way my thinking was. I'm aware of that now.
Okay. So you believed, based on what your parents told you was true about the Bible and what you believed to be true about the universe, that if you behaved and performed and did no dancing, no drugs, no sex before marriage, no, I don't even know what else to say. No playing cards. I'm pretty sure that's not in the Bible.
You don't drink, you don't chew, you don't go with folks that do.
And then what? And then you would live the good life?
And I don't understand where that came from because we were impoverished most of my life.
So we were happy, proof to the pudding.
Right. We were happy and we loved each other and we had other strengths, right? But I think also by nature, I'm a rule follower.
Okay.
And so it was just really easy for me to say, well, that's the rules. I can follow the rules. I can control
I got that. This. I got this. But then at what point did you not got this and you started to become very angry at whoever this God was that imposed all these rules on you?
So there was a few times, but really, it started to happen when I was no longer in control. Whenever it had
you were in control.
Well, I had the illusion of control, right? And I don't think we realize that we're really not in control, but we think we are.
And we want to
be. When you're 18 and 19, and, right? And 49. Then you get married, and you think that if you make his doctor's appointment, he'll go.
So you married a man.
I married a man, and he didn't go to the doctor when I made the appointment. And so I kept making appointments until we were charged, right? And so I realized, I guess I can't control him. Even though, right? I thought that's what
people went. And you know, this sounds like such a small thing, but these are the things
These are huge lessons.
Okay. Tell me more.
So then I had a baby.
Oh.
And
what'd you do that for?
Because I wanted to. And he was beautiful. And he was everything. Aww. Except he wouldn't nurse. And back in 1995, as there still is now, there was a really big push, no pun intended, to have everything all natural, right? All natural childbirth, you're going to breastfeed, you're going to, and La Leche League came in, and you weren't a woman if you couldn't do those things. And my beautiful baby boy would, the nurse would come in, he would latch on, he would be perfect, and then she would leave, and he would scream at my breast and want the bottle. And I couldn't figure out, and I couldn't figure that out.
I have so many things to say about that. This is your story.
So he just wasn't, and, but, he wasn't but following.
How did, let's connect the dots.
Sure.
Can you help me? Like, you thought that should have happened. Why?
Because I prayed, and because I believed. Prayed
what?
Because
I believed faith. What?
Just, I prayed to God and said, fix it. Fix it almost like God is a magic genie in a bottle. And that's not what God is really. But I didn't know.
Well, I don't know what God is really.
I don't think I know either, but I was trying to fit God into my idea.
And that didn't work for you.
It wasn't working. And the more
and you have this child that you love and adore and are trying to nurture and nurse, and there's no reason why you shouldn't, because you haven't done anything wrong to make you a bad parent
right.
yet. So
not yet.
So where did that take you?
So it took me to church on a one day. One day he screamed.
Because that's how you were raised.
That's how I was raised. You went to the altar, you cried and you prayed, and I went early to a service one time.
Like what kind of church? Like
someplace of God, regular, just a Pentecostal.
I feel like that's regular, but.
Like Pentecostal, evangelical Protestant church.
Okay.
And so I went early one day and I was in tears, and the pastor's wife saw me and she said, what's the matter? I said, he won't nurse. And she said, what happens when you give him a bottle? He eats. And what happens if you keep giving him a bottle? He stops crying. Will he grow if you give him a bottle? I said, yes. And she said, then give him the bottle. Nobody had ever given me permission to do it differently. The doctors were telling me to nurse. My girlfriends who were all part of La Leche League and natural.
So this sounds very minuscule to some. I get it because I raised five and I had the same pressure on me to do the same natural thing. And had it not worked out, I would have lost my shit too. So when you were granted permission to do something
different,
other,
right?
You had some freedom there.
Right. And I was like, oh. There are choices. Not every baby does this. My mom didn't know what to do with me. She couldn't even help me because I was bottle fed. There was no help.
No help. Okay. And then were you still mad at God?
I mean, I was annoyed mostly because of the money, because formula was expensive.
Right.
And so I was,
why did you do this to me?
How am I going to pay my electric bill?
Right.
I got to pay for formula.
Right.
But you kind of get over it and you just keep putting one foot in front of the other and just keep walking and having faith and standing on the word. And then he became, he had Asperger's.
How did you find this out?
So we went to preschool and he got kicked out of preschool. And I was like, how does my angel who came from me, the perfect child, right? Like I was a rule follower, straight A's.
Right.
How do you not?
You are my progeny.
How did you not come? And what right. did I marry that produced that?
Yeah, it's his fault.
It's got to be his fault.
Yeah, it is so not mine.
And,
right.
And what's wrong with these teachers that don't want, because he was not doing the behavior at home that he was doing at school.
So they saw something different than what you saw. Mm. And I'm sure then you doubted their reports.
Absolutely.
Because you don't know that kid.
Come on, I'm with him 24/7. we were fine. There was them. Then we went to kindergarten.
Okay.
And he was still really having some serious issues. And so
this is your oldest or your second?
This is my oldest.
Okay.
And so I was fortunate that I was allowed to volunteer in the classroom and I could start to see some of just the different behaviors. Nothing. If I try to describe it, it's really hard. He really had to have a lot of structure.
Yeah.
A lot of the same thing every day. Anytime the routine was varied, he would have a tantrum. So my being there helped him help stabilize his behavior.
Did anything in those days scream to you disordered or off or he's different than the rest?
Not to me.
Okay.
He was my first. I had been around a lot of kids and I just thought people weren't patient. We were in a very upscale community at the time, mm-hmm. in Thousand Oaks, California. Mm-hmm. So I really thought it was the other people. And then we were referred to Tri-City testing
for like an evaluation.
Tri-County. Yeah, like Inland Regional Center.
So this was to evaluate whether or not there was a disorder. And you're probably like.
He was intelligent. He could read before he could crawl. Mm-hmm. He knew his letters. He knew his numbers like before he was 2 years old. So I thought I had this intelligent genius child and you all are boring him to death. That's what I thought.
Uh-huh.
And my mom,
well, I think that's fair.
My
I think
mom had a master's degree in education.
Same.
So we all thought.
And this is 1994?
So he's born in 93. So 98.
Okay. And so our understanding of diagnostic statistical manual disorders like DSM and anything different than what we have deemed normal, I don't even know where to go with that conversation, was unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
We're on DSM-5 now. I think we're on DSM-1 or 2 then. So what did you learn after the evaluation?
So they diagnosed him with something called pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified, which...
Tell our audience in kind of normal
basically,
terms what that
something's
means.
Off. We don't know what it is and we're not going to treat it. So go.
Yeah. You know, so basically put it back in school.
He needs an individual education plan. He needs
to address
the behaviors and a lot of praise. And if he gets a lot of praise and if he had a lot of structure from the teachers that provided him with structure had really good success with Daniel. And so
your firstborn turns out not to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
He turns out not to be not only not perfect, but not accepted in the norm.
Mm-hmm.
He turns out to have a diagnosis that puts him on some spectrum. That means you have to stop what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and go learn abnormality. Mm-hmm. You have to go find additional services.
Mm-hmm.
You have to deny what your reality is and what they're telling you the reality is, mm-hmm. and go petition for additional.
That whatever. I kind of don't know what they are and I didn't know what to ask for either.
And
that was hard. And then here's what made it worse. So we went from that really well-to-do neighborhood in Thousand Oaks,
mm-hmm.
and went to Harbor City, which is very, not very urban,
mm-hmm.
A lot of bilingual students.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly Daniel's behaviors didn't stand out.
Oh, he was one of them. They were one of him.
Yeah. He fit right in. And so then I was told in first and second grade, there's nothing wrong with your child, which I don't want to be told anything different. Right. So when the teacher, they were wrong. I don't know where you got that. There's nothing wrong. He's perfectly fine. He fits right in. He does the work he's doing.
Okay, Chris. Susie, so you have had this like ongoing relationship with God. You have performed very well. You are married according to the rules of the church. You reproduced according to the rules of the church, unlike me. That's a story for a whole another year. This child appears brilliant, and then someone tells you he's not. But then you go somewhere else that says, oh, he's normal, because maybe they're all on the spectrum. So at what point, though, did this, like, because I know that we've talked before, mm-hmm. and I know this, like, caused you a major pause and got you really upset with God.
So it wasn't just that. There was more. Like, there were a lot more things that happened. Like, my dad died while I was pregnant with him.
Oh.
My marriage started to really tank. And no matter what I did to perform to help my husband and or whatever I could do, there was nothing I could do that was enough. And suddenly, that's when the loss of control. And I really started to realize I needed a plan B. I wasn't going to be the stay at home, but a stay at home wife anymore. I needed a plan B. I needed to finish school.
So were you like, God, were you looking to God for plan B or were you looking elsewhere for plan B?
I came up with plan B.
Okay.
Without any,
Christy's really, got plan
without
B.
Without any real consultation with God, just kind of what society and what people do. You go to college, you get a job, that'll fix your problems.
Okay.
And so I did. I went to college. I got a job. I got hired into the job that I have now. I've been doing that for 13 years, but my marriage just unraveled. It just came apart.
And what happened internally for you with regards to this? Right? Because you and I both were, and the audience doesn't know this, but just this is a backroom glance. We were both raised and taught legalism is the word I use. I know you use that word too. I don't know if the audience understands that, but this, like, there's rules you follow, and when you follow them, you get the consequences or the results,
the reward. Right.
Right. So it's very conditional. Like, and, but it's not just like, it's not just in daily life, but it's in who you are. You either good or you're bad, and you either go to hell or heaven, or
like there was, everything was very black and white.
Yeah.
Everything. There was no gray in between. And then I came into social work.
Everything's gray.
There's no, you ask 20 so
social,
social
worker.
You ask 20 social workers, how should I handle this? You're going to get 20 different answers. That was really a challenge for me. That really challenged my thinking. There has to be a right way. There's always, my dad was in law enforcement. You're right or you're wrong.
Interesting.
There's no in between. It's either the right way or the wrong way. There's no in between.
So I'm looking at the time and I want to move toward how you handled this disconnect between, I would imagine, fierce disappointment.
I really didn't handle well when I left my husband, and I was really torn and just really angry and very miserable about how my life was. It was not the life I expected. When I had to tell the people who were really important to me that I had to leave my husband, that the marriage wasn't working, like my mom and my Aunt Judy and other people, and even my pastor at the time that I really thought would judge me. Funny thing was, no one was surprised. No one was surprised.
So you were worked up and ready for some form of rejection.
I had excommunication.
Sure.
You could never serve in the church again because you
have
sinned.
See all the stories we tell ourselves in our head?
Everything that was in my head.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as bad, first of all. Kudos to my church, because there are churches that would have been.
Well, kudos to the people.
The
in
people,
your church.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Kudos to those people. And so, and then when I say the church, that's what I mean, is the people. Right.
Uh-huh.
And so, so I was fortunate to have that. And so that helped me to sort of settle. But then I met someone who was raised also very similarly, the same type of background that I did. But that person had decided to be an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
And so we worked together. And so one day I asked, you know, tell me, sometimes it sounds like you're a Christian when we're working with clients, but then other times it sounds like you're not. Which is it? Because you seem to adapt. And is that something, is that part of how you're doing the social work? Why is that? And that person said that it was really important to them that whatever strengths the clients had, if that was church, that you work with that. If it's not, then you work with that. And he did come from the same background, but that he was an atheist. And he gave me a book about being an atheist. And I read it and I thought, this solves all my problems. If I'm an atheist and
yes.
God doesn't exist,
then it's not God's fault.
Then this measure and this standard is gone from me.
Okay.
And now I can just be.
Okay. That sounds like relief to me.
It was a lot of relief, but now my kids are older, right? They're teenagers. And they wanted to go to church. Because
you raised them that way.
So I took them to church. because I wasn't going to impose this new, because I wasn't sure about it yet, right? And so that's where that kind of became this, I was kind of the worst atheist because I was
Let me back this out a little bit, because my goodness, we could talk, we have talked for hours on end, and this can go so many directions, but becoming an atheist relieved your anger at God because there is no God.
Because there is no God, and now there's no standard that I don't have control over that I can't live up to.
So it sounds like that freed you to loosen some expectations on what should be, mm-hmm. because there's no higher power that's demanding something from you. Right. Am I getting getting that?
Yeah.
And your, of course, your children always will follow the patterns that they were raised with until they grow up and think for themselves and find their way out or wherever they end up. Which is glorious, but they, of course, kind of moved back in that direction. And so you, because you love your children, I drive you to church. I'll sit in church. And so then, you know, let's kind of, what happened?
So I had a friend at work who was going to a church and she didn't understand her sermons on Sunday. We would have lunch on Mondays. And I had gone to Bible college. I knew. Mm-hmm. So when she would talk about the scriptures that she wasn't understanding, I understood them.
Oh, so Cece the atheist would then communicate all of her theological knowledge.
Because I didn't want my friend to not understand what she was going through. And I said, I said to my friend, who was mm-hmm. also a social worker, I said, now you need to understand that I've recently decided to be an atheist, mm-hmm. but I understand the scriptures. Mm-hmm. And so I'm happy to explain it to you. If you want that, so that you don't have to be confused.
Was she not only confused, but was she angry at God too?
No, she wasn't in that place. She was just really open to learning and wanting. So she was in a different place. I think the important part of this story is, had I said that to myself, like if I had been another person, if somebody else had said that to me, right. I would have immediately judged you. And she didn't judge me. She just accepted the help. Just where I was, and the way I was raised, if you weren't saved and sanctified, right, whatever
Christian term
for Christian terms, right, like if you weren't holy and all that, and just living the right life,
right,
that you couldn't minister to anybody else.
So minister, that's
you couldn't give, help, you couldn't give. Help, give, do anything. You couldn't be up front on the platform. Giving of yourself in whatever gift or capacity if you weren't living
so
that
I
good
feel
life.
Like okay so what I'm hearing, and correct me please, this is your story, is that when you identified an expectation that was off, mm-hmm. or you at least gave permission for whatever is to be what is, there was a relief of perfectionism pressure, mm-hmm. or something of that sort,
right?
And so where are you now with all that? Because your son still had the diagnosis. He has struggled. Mm-hmm. You are still a single mom, although you mm-hmm. found love on the other side. And that's another story. Mm-hmm. But you are still a social worker mm-hmm. who every day sits down with people and has the opportunity to either judge or just be with them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you meet with many people who are angry at God. Mm-hmm. You and I have been beside ourselves, bitching and whining and moaning this last year about all that this pandemic has done to us.
Well, let's be real, because I fell in love. So you have had...
that's too much information.
You were the one that the pandemic wasn't so bad. We've all lived in the pandemic and it has changed, but I've had such a wonderful year.
So you
compared
didn't,
to
you
my
didn't
other
lose
years.
Your job.
I didn't lose my job. I didn't lose year before I had lost all my family.
I was just
going
to say, so we have 10 minutes and you have to hear this piece, because I don't think you really get the depth of this conversation until you get this. I was at the LA Rams Philadelphia Eagles game in LA, sitting in a truck with some friends about ready to go into the game in December of 2018 when my phone rang, and Sunday morning, you and I sometimes will communicate on the weekend. We have more time to do that. So I just ignored it. But when I saw a message pop up, I listened to it right away. And then I called you back. Because what had happened that day?
My younger sister died suddenly in her sleep.
At age?
At age. She's 2 years and 10 months younger than me. So 45.
So at the time, yeah. And 3 months.
3 months. Prior, my mom,
prior,
almost to the day,
Cece's mom passed, and so in the course, so you had your shit year in 2018.
Mm-hmm. I really did,
and so
and 2019,
and 2019, because you don't get over that in a moment, and you're angry. For anger is a part of grief.
So I think what happened was prior to that, I had the opportunity to live with my mom and my sister because my mom needed some extra care. And so I came all broken and angry. My kids didn't want to be around me, which is a whole judgment.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
That's a whole judgment.
Not today.
That just made me feel like I was the worst mom ever. I just came at the lowest point. I can still see my sister cooking dinner and looking at me, ready to correct me or maybe even have an argument with me when she saw how broken I was. And I could see her stop. And then she just stopped what she was doing. And she came over and she put her arms around me. And we just both sobbed because this was not supposed to be my life. It should not, this is not the plan. And I didn't know how to fix it. And I lived with them and slept on their couch for 3 years, regaining my confidence, remembering who I was.
Post-divorce.
Pre-death.
Pre-death
for both of them.
And sister.
Reconnected with them. And just, I say they loved me back to who I was.
To wholeness.
To wholeness, yeah. And so when mom died, it was hard. Losing your mom is not easy. It was more expected.
Mine's still living, but
it was
it
had become very difficult caring for her. And so it was a little bit of a relief. It was very sad. It was very hard. But when Jennifer died, that came out of nowhere. She wasn't sick. She'd recently had every kind of diagnostic test. And so that it just came out of nowhere. And so I immediately went back to church, probably for the first time in 5 or 6 years.
Why? If you're angry at God, if you've walked through the atheist piece, if everything you knew and believed in the past didn't do it for you, what brought you back to church per se?
So my mom and my sister were very religious. One of the things that we had to worship together on Sundays, even though mom couldn't go to church, we would watch a show that she liked, a pastor that she liked, and we would sing worship songs. And that was just a requirement of being there, right? And
so you honored her.
I honored her in that way and kept my opinions about it to myself.
Yeah.
But in doing that, I started to really see my mom more as a real person and some of the flaws that I had maybe ignored or not seen or was too young to understand. And she opened up to me, and I learned my mom in a different way. And I started to realize all this perfectionism that I thought existed didn't really exist. And then I was able to say, God, I'm really pissed. I'm angry. My life shouldn't be like this. These aren't the choices I was trying to make. And once I was able to just admit that I was angry.
To whine.
Whine and let it all
out there
and just say, instead of hiding it and I'm done. And I did all of it. I said all those words to God, and guess what I learned? His shoulders are big enough. He wasn't surprised.
He weren't smitten with fire from on high.
There was no,
your car didn't crash.
No, I didn't have lightning, didn't come and get me. The ground didn't open and swallow me up.
Yeah.
I found grace.
Ooh. I love that word. That is like a really, really, really great place for us to segue. Mm-hmm. Although I want to keep this conversation going. Grace is a 5-letter word, not a 4-letter word. Mm-hmm. We will use lots of 4-letter words on this show. But what do you mean you found grace?
So
what is grace to you?
So the Webster's version, right, unmerited favor.
Unmerited favor. So
something you don't earn, right?
Something good you don't earn.
Something good you don't
favor.
Earn. Favor.
So someone looks upon you and it's not what
you don't deserve.
It's not the 100% on the test. It's not the, I gave birth to 5 perfect children. It's not, I wore white on my wedding day and I stayed married for 120 years.
It's I love you the way you are right where you're at.
So I fucked up.
Doesn't matter.
I didn't measure up.
It doesn't matter.
And so, I'm struggling with trauma.
And grace helps you.
I'm not sure I want to be here anymore.
And so grace meets you right there.
I mean, is there no argument against grace in your mind? Because this is radical. I feel like grace is a radical concept. Like I have grace tattooed on my arm, on my wrist, for any of you watching on Facebook, because it has been the most profound understanding of any construct, concept, theoretical or otherwise, that I have ever experienced in my life.
The best description I ever heard came from a pastor, T.D. Jakes, Bishop T.D. Jakes. And so he said on a Steve Harvey show, when Steve Harvey was retiring, the very last show, he said, if you're in a boat and the boat is sinking and you're 500 yards from the shore, and you drown 500 yards from the shore or you drown 50 yards from the shore, it doesn't matter. Both people drown, right? Grace is that thing that will pluck you out, whether you're 500 yards from shore or whether you're 50 yards from shore. And I think what I had done is, look at me, how close I got to the shore. Look at me, look at all my performance.
I deserve salvation, saving, rescuing, whatever it is. And that idiot, asshole, whatever behind me who, I don't know, we don't know their story.
Right.
We don't know their story.
But I was so focused on, look at how close I can get. But I still needed grace to get the rest of the way. And I needed the same grace as the other person.
The person 500 feet, yards, whatever, miles behind us needed.
It's the same grace. Wow. Because you're going to die at 50 yards. You're going to drown if you don't get it. So that was a very powerful moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when even though I went back to church, I wanted the structure. I knew I no longer had family immediate around me. I knew that was a quick place I could get support and strength.
So you found grace at church. Have you found grace outside of church? Because I am certain that the majority of our audience is either disinterested or hurt by or whatever.
Oh, from church isn't for everybody.
Okay. So
it's just what I knew. I returned to what I knew.
But grace to you wasn't about the
rules.
Yeah.
It was about love. That love is never the wrong choice. So when you love, it's never the wrong choice.
Even if that person doesn't deserve it like the other person does.
So that's not grace then.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about deserve.
And it's maybe not love
maybe
either.
Maybe not love either. It's about, you may want to rethink if that's the person, if you're going to continue to offer yourself to that person, you might want to take a look at that relationship. Maybe you're going to change some things or set some different boundaries, and that's okay. I'm not saying let them steamroll you either or be a doormat. I'm saying love is never the wrong choice. If your motives are right and you're coming from a place of integrity, then that's all right. I don't have to worry about it. I can't control
this
other person.
This is so glorious.
I only get to control me.
How do we start a story off with being angry at God and end it, Cece, with love?
Well, he just loved me where I was. And
he
I
is
didn't
God to you.
He did, yes.
Yes.
And I didn't know that could happen
mm-hmm.
for me.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard about it at church. I had sort of seen it with other people. And it wasn't until I finally said, I can't do this anymore. And I had my breaking point. And we're talking, I grew up in all of it.
We're steeped in it. And only because those that steeped us in it, it's all they knew and believed in, mm-hmm. and it held them steady. And I think that's the permission we give one another when we really love.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Cece and I have had many a conversation about what our recovery processes have looked like, coming out of divorce and out of pain and out of religion and things like that. And we have laughed our asses off about the crazy stuff we've done in our attempts to heal. Mm-hmm. And then we have also shared very meaningful exchanges when we kind of sit for a minute and reflect on those who presented for us in a graceful way. And so please do not take this as a support for religiosity. It's no. not. This is about...
It's just about choosing love over the other, to be able to recognize when your thinking is broken, when it's not working, and that you, in giving yourself permission to look at it, change your perspective, look at it from a different point of view.
Yeah.
And realize if it wasn't working, I can't keep putting that square peg in a round hole. Let me try and see what adjustment can I make, and give yourself permission to do that. Because the universe, God, whoever, even the people around you, not all of them, but some of them, will be there to give you that grace and to help you and to guide you and to lead you.
And how do we know how to do that if someone doesn't show us the way to do that? I feel like right now this is so apropos because they're communally and nationally, we are very divided, mm-hmm. and we're very finger pointing. And Cece, this has been a beautiful segue into my closing today, because the H in wine on the vine is representative of a couple of things. One is the word happen, because from our social work training, from our experience, from our grace-infused relationships, we have learned that ne'er should we ever ask or point a finger and say, what's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. Instead, we should ask, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened? That's the H, right? Happened. What happened to you? And because when we hear someone's story, Cece, what happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
And then I hear what happened to her, I understand a little bit more why you're angry at God, mm-hmm. why you're angry at men, why you're angry at, you know, the universe for this, right. and that and the other. When we only say what's wrong with you, we then take a position of the high horse, mm-hmm. and being better than, and we have all the answers, and we don't care about your story.
Right.
We want to fix you.
And that's true when you're being self-reflective as well, because I kept saying, what's the matter with me? What's wrong with me? And it wasn't. It was, look at what's happened. Look at change. It was a reframe. It was definitely change your thinking. And going back and telling those stories and telling the truth.
Because it wasn't your fault that your son was born the way he was born. It's not your fault.
There was nothing I did. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't cause it. I can't cure it. And I can't control it.
Beautiful. And the H, from my perspective, as we bring this show to a close, has so much to do with holiness. And not in the religious way. I think that when we get the opportunity to share our stories, there is a sacred space that happens, right? And I suddenly see you differently. Mm-hmm. I suddenly don't need to judge you. Mm-hmm. I suddenly can, or not so suddenly, can sit with the story and ruminate a little bit and go, what if that had happened to me? I might have the same whine. I might have the same angst. I might not have known what to do either. And oh my goodness, I have something now to behold and to learn from and to gain from this beautiful human being, mm-hmm. sitting next to me. And I'm not here to ascertain your political views or your religiosity or anything like that. I'm just here to listen and then to understand. So Cece, thank you so, 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 so much for being my first guest ever on the show.
Well,
you're so brave.
Thank you for having me. It was, we've been looking forward to this.
She's brave. Because you never know what's going to come out of this mouth, and it might be yes, and it may take some a moment to respond. You might like if my mom's listening right now, I might have to revert to some of my former religiosity and I don't know, beg forgiveness, penance, something might have to occur. So our time is up. It's time to hand this beautiful LA Talk Radio back over to Sam, who runs the show. I want to tell you, next week I'll have a different guest. Our theme is Coming to America, and I welcome you back. Please know that I can be found on www.wineonthevine.com. All of these shows will be archived, of course, on LA Talk Radio, and I will have them available in time on my website as well. You guys are great. Thank you so much for your attention. I look forward to seeing you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Wine on the Vine with Lisa Mayaka, only on LA Talk Radio.